I'll introduce you first.
Okay, great.
Right. Velkommen til Nord Oslo sitt månedlige medlemsmøte. In English, we have Philippe Ingrain from Paris, flown in especially for today, and he'll be talking about how to make public debate easier using some very interesting free software tools that he's been working on. He's the CEO of Society for Open Spaces.
For public information.
Public information. Yeah. All right. But he can tell you more about this, Philippe Ingrain. And before we start, after the meeting, we'll go up to eat some good food and have a chat and socialize at the restaurant on the other side of the square. And while you're here, please write on the list you have here and tell us if you want to get further announcements from you. Anything else? Philippe Ingrain.
Thank you. Thanks a lot to Nuke and Salve Nielsen in particular for the invitation and the unique opportunity for me to be on a beautiful autumn day in Oslo. As if you have read my biography in the announcement, or you have an idea that I do many different things, one of them is running the company, as I just mentioned, and we are specialized in developing software tools, but also actually running public debates on the web on policy issues. Apart from that, I try to do some thinking on the stakes of a world in which information and communication technology is important, and the cultural and democratic meaning of that. And I do some activism on the regulatory environment that influences this world of information and communication technology, try to make it more favorable to freedom, to cooperation, and sharing of knowledge. But when we discussed what the talk would be about, we realized it was better to focus it on one precise and concretely graspable subject. And so I will start from one tool and service that we are developing, a free software tool and service, and I will go to more theoretical or still practical, but wider than IT questions, only from the tool. I also remark that, let's say, free software in particular, when there is an idea that it's going to be technical, doesn't attract more women in Norway than in France. And I think this is actually a very bad sign. This has been a concern for me for many years, and I think the type of applications we are trying to develop together with many other forms of applications like applications in the cultural and artistic field have a chance to change in the long run that situation, but we are not there yet. An idea of what I will cover, I will start by a demo, so we all know what we are talking about. You have seen it working only at least at a superficial level. And then I will try to situate this tool in a very long history of a very essential activity of mankind, or humanity, the activity of annotating and commenting on text. I will give you an idea of what we think could be the usage of this tool called comment, and also what is at the present stage, what we know of its usage. then from that I will progressively go in more contextual questions like the licensing issues and more generally the freedom issues in when you are in the realm of web services and also the business models for a company that develops software that is entirely free in the web service world, that is where also the server-side code is free. Then I will say a bit about what we consider as present imperfections and challenges for the development of this type of tool. And finally, I will say a few words about how, if you wish, you could help. Now, I will jump to the demo. I need my glasses for that. So basically, this is, you don't, it's too bad to have a white screen, but you don't see much. But Comment is, it's a software, but this software is used to deliver a service on the web. Can be the internal web to an organization, can be the open web. You are now in the situation here of a user that has just registered to be a user of a web service. This is the public open web service that we are running. I didn't show the registration phase because it has nothing original to it, and it has validation stages that are a bit painful to demo. Though we try to keep them as simple as possible. The key idea in Comment is that we just it has been always, or for a long time, it was possible for people to do to put a text on the web in an organization if they control a web server, and to develop some server-side software so people can comment on it. What we wanted with this is to make it as easy to submit a text for comments as it is to produce one comment on the text. This is what we call the symmetrization of a service. We don't want that users are stuck with just being commenters on text servers. We want them also to be able to make, to submit their own text. Doesn't mean everybody is doing it or is doing it all the time, but it's definitely possible. So, sorry, this is the key back office of this service is the workspace, and the two basic functions in it when there is nothing yet is you can upload an existing text, and you can upload from the classical word processing formats from other things, or you can create one one of the way of creating a text is just to copy it from the web, which I'm doing now, and I am not able to tag Norwegian, but normally people, if particularly they intend to make their, to submit their text for comments by the public at large, they tag them to make this text easier to find. As when you have done that, one of the things you can do is to manage who will be allowed to view this text, to comment on it, and basically you can either work in a private mode, that is you only only the people you have invited to comment will be able to view and comment the text, or you can work in a public mode, and you will see that in our business model, we make it really free to, with some quantitative constraints, but really open for everybody and free to submit text to public comments. But when people want to work in private, for example, in an organization, then we put limits that mean that they will have to subscribe to an online service or another form of for charge service for being able to do so on a real scale. So why is there this distinction? It's because we think when people contribute to a public ecosystem of texts that are open for comment and use our software, we gain something in return. We get some network effects, some visibility of the software, and it's a reasonable deal, at least at this stage, for us to provide the service for free, even though it costs us, but not much, to provide it. So what I'm going to do here is to allow anybody to comment on the text. So the text is becoming public. It has appeared on the list of public texts, and if you go to it, you are now in the position of anybody. So I log out. Anybody can go and say and can start commenting. Commenting, the big difference in this type of commenting systems is that comments are not bits of text that are below a blog post or a blog post or another form of text on the web. And they apply to a definite part of the text. And so here, I'm just showing you how it works to make a comment. This is a stupid comment. So, yeah, you see it reasonably well. After a while, you can see the parts of text that have been commented, and I'm now going to go to, since you must have understood how comments could be done, I'm going to go to other texts, and you will see. But sometimes it's all the text that has been commented. There is the implicit model of behind the idea of doing a commenting system is that there can be much more information, much more text in the comments than there is in the actual text initially, in some cases. In other cases, the text will be submitted for marginal corrections by readers, and it would be very limited. There will be maybe two or three comments. But in other cases, here it's a very special case. It's someone who is probably a translator and is studying. So actually, a comment Some of the comments are remarks on translation, but actually if you go further you will see that sometimes comments are actually the complete translation into English of this German speaking text. So and there are, I think there are 48 comments, and they are all by the same person who put the text on the web, that is, he used it as a personal annotation tool. This is not at all how we imagine that the system would be used, but I mean, if it, someone does it, probably it's useful for that person. Now I'm going to show you things on text that belong to me. Well, this is the more typical work. This is a work being done in private, but the text belongs to me as an actual person, not as a demo user. And here you can get an idea of what you can do with comments. But these comments, they have comments have tags. The tags can have been submitted initially by the commenter, the person who has produced the comment, but the moderator or editor can change or add tags that are, for example, used for indexing and are can be used in filtering. There is an elaborate filtering system that allows, for example, you can tag with a keyword all the comments that are on a given subject, and when that's done, you can filter them. You can show only these comments. Another thing is comments have they have workflow. Some here you see one of the most simple workflow. It's basically it's a workflow where there is moderation, so the a posteriori moderation, that is, the comment is, the initial stage is to be visible and then can be rejected or it can be published, that is, it has been approved by a moderator. Sometimes apart from that, you also have a revision system with versioning. That is, when you have the comments, you, in some cases, they lead. I mean, you have submitted the text for comments because you wanted your text to be better, you wanted the insight of others. So, or you wanted the opinion of others, so you revise it according to the comments or to your processing of the comments. When you do that, there is a relatively complex treatment that makes it possible to keep comments or not in a new version. When the version has changed a lot, this can be sometimes an impossible thing. That is, for example, comments that point on a part of the text that has disappeared. But in most cases, if people want, they can keep the relationship between the comments and the text while they are producing new versions. In most cases, in the actual workflows we have been able to observe, they don't want necessarily to do that. In most cases, a new text is produced that takes care of a generation of comments, and the new text is again put on the web or simply exported without the comments being kept. But it's possible to keep them. Finally, there are, as I suggested, there are export facilities. That is, you can re-export the text, including text that has been modified, to a variety of classical word processing formats. And this is not an elaborate text editing and laying out system. If you re-export text, in some cases expect to have some reformatting, minor reformatting to do, as with any let's say classical web editing, collaborative web editing tool. So that's all for the demo, because you can all try it. So it's just to give you a flavor of what the system looks like. Actually, there is a tour that you can that will simply drive you through the basic stages of usage. This is also something that has been written by the key developers, and I should say that I am not one of them. I'm the person paying them and making some structural decisions, but the key developers are two young French software developers called Raphaël Badin and Renaud Bernard, and actually they would maybe give a better talk than me on some of the aspects of this software. Now, where do all of this comes from? There is an absolutely huge tradition, in particular in the philosophical and religious domain, of annotating and commenting texts. I took this example because not because I read Arabic, because I don't read Arabic, but because it has some elements that show how people were struggling with the limitation of a paper page when they were trying to do annotation systems in an era where we didn't have IT. So is there something like a pointer? Yes, this should work.
On your computer? You have a mouse pointer on your computer?
No, I mean, but it's, it's not going to be as visible as laser. The text, and also it has some side effects. okay. You have only 11 lines of text, and the lines are the horizontal right to left written Arabic. This is a text on rhetorics, on argumentation, on debate. And actually, the debate started by debating on debate. and you see there are lots of forms of annotation. The first column at the right of the text, this is and also what is above in oblique, these are actual comments. Sometimes there are explanations, sometimes they are explaining what the commenter thinks of the text. They can be correctives, because these texts were handwritten, copied, and often there were mistakes in them. And then the second column, sometimes there are comments on the first column comments, but sometimes there are appositions, that is, they are just comments that are juxtaposed. They are not actually commenting on the first one. Sometimes they make reference to line numbers, because the lines are numbered, and to line numbers on other pages, because this was the only way to have a reference to a wider scope of the text. Between the lines, you have small oblique comments, and they are definitions, basically. They are definition of concepts. A small short sentence that clarifies the meaning of a word. I'm very grateful to a great Arab scholar of poetry and great fan of hypertext, Hussam Al-Khatib, and to the translator of my books in Arabic for explaining all this to me, because of course I have no clue what the comments are here. Now, this is much more recent and old. It's also broken, but it's much more recent, and also it's much less beautiful. But in the early 90s, in the National Library in France, there was a big project of making a huge digital library. And I was part of a working group, and we were working on what would be the functionality for readers. And we had the idea that readers were not going to be just to read digital text as they would read paper texts. So among the functionality we wanted them to have was annotation. But the people in the library, they wanted to digitize many books, and because it was 10 times more expensive to do the OCR, they were planning to do only images of texts. So we told them it was stupid, but they were stuck with that decision. And we decided to try to see what one could reasonably do with annotating an image of text. And we did a prototype using HyperCard. You're not old enough. It was a contemporary of SuperCard. I mean, it's a small hypertext Mac specialized. And we actually did a system for injecting, for creating HyperCard stacks, they were called, I think, from images. And we prototyped it, and it was mimetic to what people do with books when they have a right to do it, that is, they write on it. But there are things like where you see this one here, it's actually, this is a bit of an image that is taken from the text and put in the margin, and it's an index. So you had a kind of tag load, because for tags, you can do it with images. Who cares if the system understands actually what is the word? So this was completely stupid, but it was an effort, and some of the concepts actually could make sense in a more reasonable world. And so I've tried to imagine what it would look like to do the same project with the tools of today. So this is completely anachronic, but basically, if you would do today a system that imitates and written annotation on what are pages of text, you would do a system a bit like this. And actually, some people are doing it. This is what actually people did after our small prototype. Since this is a Unix user group, you must recognize the mess of the windows flying everywhere. This was actually a company, and it's, I'm sorry, this is in Greek, but this was a company. Actually, it's the leading provider of HTML-based editing to publishers and to digitization. And they did a system that basically had many of the concepts that are used today in commenting systems, but except that they were, instead of being integrated in a reasonable interface, they were, let's say, a GIMP 1-like, even at a worse stage. Now, culturally, we have to realize when we say we want people to annotate text, what we are up against, because actually annotating text is a crime. At least it is in libraries, of course, because in the library of Cambridge University Library, there has a whole set of cases of crimes that have been done by readers, and basically where they explain you that you, if you underline only one page, you will still pay for the whole book and things like that. But actually, this is not just a joke. Actually, the idea that people, that you are actually going to write things on text that is not so easy to accept to a basic reader. And maybe it's one of the reasons why we just did underlining as an interface. We took that from another system that I will show, but we didn't actually make people writing on the text. We kept a separation between the text submitted to comments and the comments in space. Now, all these systems that I've shown before, they were standalone. Of course, the paper page itself, but even the other one, they were standalone. With the birth of the web, there was actually an explosion of annotation systems, and I must say, the first generation, none of them worked in terms of take-up in usage. They were all based on the same idea. You go to a web page, but at the same time, you have some form of plugin that is connected to a server. An annotation server will recognize that you are on this page, at this place of the page, and will show you comments, either your comments or comments by other people. The World Wide Web Consortium has tried to standardize that through a variety of standards, and Anotea is now the leading one. And now I think we are growingly going to see a wider usage of this, except that there is some reluctance of people to let their bookmarks, their comments, be appropriated by the provider of service. And this is the best faring one today is Digo, still. We've also the MySTickies, or Stickies, I don't remember, which is one that is specially intended for blogs. This is not to be confused with our system. These are things for annotating any web pages. Our system is a server on which you upload the text, and it's a web-based annotation application. But it's not if you want to annotate a web page with it, you you have to copy it like I have done. So it's not the real web page that is annotated. A while after, in particular around since 2000, and particularly since the completion of the sequencing of many genomes, people have started the biggest annotation project that there is, which is annotating tens of genomes of various organisms. And they have done absolutely wonderful software for doing that. This is the browser side of a software called Ensemble. It's open source software. It enables you to browse at various scale, something we are not able to do with text today. But of course, there is an implicit structure in the genomes that facilitate it. You can see annotations that are from many different sources. From, let's say, the annotation, the model is the annotations are stored on local server, and the genome is stored on a public server. And when you browse, the client software will bring all together in your browser. This has many differences with text, in particular the horizontal, let's say the fact that there is only one long line, let's say. The genome is represented as a very long line, and not so you do not have the complexity of the spatial complexity of the text. And it wouldn't make sense, of course, to make that for text. Some people have tried to do commenting system for specific situations. And the basic case for that is a scientific publication reviewing. There are systems for online journals where you can, the referees can comment on the text directly, but this is something different. This is a plus one, the first, let's say, an experimental open access journal of the Public Library of Science, where they have a very quick reviewing process, like 1 month, and then the accepted papers are put online, but they are open for comments. This is a system that we looked at a lot at. It uses a completely different model, but the comments are only signaled by a small footnote call-like icon, and then when you click on it, you see the comment. It suffers. I mean, it's great, but it's not symmetrical. Only plus as the software to put papers online, and it's it lacks a back office workflow. For example, when you comment like I did there, I did a serious comment on the paper, and I never at this day, it's more than a year ago. I don't think any of the authors know. There is no system for registering, subscribing to comments on your text and stuff like that. But nonetheless, it's quite a nice development. So I already said that when we start. Oh, where is that? Maybe. Sorry. I have to go to STET so you can see it, because it wouldn't be fair, because STET was STET is a commenting system that was our key inspiration for some of the interface. So I need to when the general public license was revised to produce version 3 from version 2, there was a long process put in place during more than 1 year, and this process used the publication of drafts and an open commenting phase where anybody could comment the draft. And actually, my company was involved in the early design of a process and some of the functional definition of the commenting system. But actually, what they did was much better than what we advised them to do. We took from their realization, it's mostly David Turner from the Free Software Foundation. We took the use of color and gradation of color to show the presence and the number of comments. Relatively simple idea, special column-like juxtaposition of comments, but we didn't use any of the software. I mean, STET was a completely ad hoc development. It was a really quick and dirty operation from existing bits of software, and it couldn't work. Actually, it wouldn't work for long texts, but it's still a very useful piece of software, and it was released. It has been one of the first software released under the Affero GBL version 3. So basically, STET still had the same flow in our sense than the other systems, is that it took a quite elaborate operation for someone to submit a text to comments. I mean, it was when the Free Software Foundation had to put the new version of the GPL, it took a while to do it. It was not a really complex work, but something that would really encumber wide usage. So that's why we decided, and that was actually an idea of the two key developers, to make it something where submitting a text to comments is as easy as commenting. Apart from that, we also used our... I was a member of one of the committees that worked on the revision of the GPL. And these committees, they were working on, actually, the GPL had two drafters for the initial draft and 1.5 for the further drafts. I mean, that is, the two drafters were Evan Moglen and Richard Stallman. And for the revised draft, Evan Moglen was volunteering new formulation, and RMS was vetoing it or letting it pass. And there was a basic distribution of role for the drafting side. And then the function of the committees, there were four parallel committees by type of stakeholders. And these committees, their role was to look at all the comments, including their own, and to turn them into issues. issues are things that require decisions, and possibly with two or three options for the decision. Actually, this was how the process was described, but it turned out that in practice, issues were not enough to make decisions. You needed really drafting options. So the committees were producing issues description, then Eben Moglen and his team were producing drafting options, and then a decision was taken. But from working on this process, in particular the phase of going from the comments to issues, we realized that it was very important to have a simple abstract workflow for that. And so you have not seen it, but we have more complex workflow than the one that I have shown that you can apply, where you have things that are like you have in many bug tracking systems, let's say. Things that say, oh, this comment is redundant, this comment is discarded. I mean, I don't want to consider it. This one is, yes?
I apologize for coming in late. Do you want questions now or at the
Yes, end? Yes, please, especially if it's clarification. Yeah.
Okay. Any user can submit their text to comments. What happens when the text underneath that changes because of a revision? What happens to the comments?
Let's say, when there is a revision, you have an option of keeping the comments or discarding them in the new version. If you keep them, the comments that are attached to a part of the text that is still there and still has kept its integrity, they are kept and they are at the right place, which was a pain. When the text has disappeared partially or totally, they become part of a heap of comments waiting to be repositioned or discarded. So is that the correct answer to your question?
Thank you.
We have roles. We have a five-level role where you have you can view. Let's say if you can view a text, you are allowed to comment it. You can moderate it. Moderate it means you can change the state of comments and you can tag comments. You can be an editor. That is, you can revise the text. And the implicit idea, I will explain it later, there is an implicit usage model behind that, but the real usage is a bit more diverse than what we thought. We decided to try to separate the semantic processing from the decision processing, that is, indexing comments. We use tags because we are not able to do better to index comments according to domains or to types of opinions or to issues. But the process, the workflow states, we use them for making preparing actual decisions on comments. Finally, like most systems, we break with a printed page model, that is, we have a flow of text and no longer, which can, as a cost, in particular when you export back to the printed page world, because you don't see, you do not have a page layout in the revision system. And finally, there is something we choose not because we thought it was a good idea, but because we didn't think of a way of doing otherwise, which is to have I'm going to show you something secret, but that you can all see. If you look at the source, the way the system knows where comments apply is because every word is surrounded by tag, by HTML tags, and everybody does it like that. And it's so they are numbered, and there is a very complex programming for making sure that all of this is properly kept track of, and that there is real performance. If you are using Firefox 3, which is about, I don't know for Opera, I'm cautious in Norway too, but Firefox 3 is much faster for this type of processing than other work browsers. If you are using it, it's no problem to work with 100 page text with fine print. So there is performance, but if we want to move further in making revisions of text easier, having such an unstructured representation of a text where actually two words that are close in the text, they can belong to a completely different part of the tree that would represent the text in any reasonable structure. And this is not something we like, but there is a need for look and feel that is similar to what if you were commenting this text on your machine, if you were doing annotations using a word processor. Have to go a bit faster, but as I said, our implicit model of usage was quite simple. It was something I had observed in many organizations, but also in NGO, in activism, in NGOs that work on text, that write alternative treaties, declarations, charters, and stuff like that. And there is a small number of key drafters. You know, it's after there has been talked for 15 days about a given text at some stage late at night, with lots of wine or beer, there are two people in front of a computer who will write the revision, and everybody will have to accept it or not. But that's the, let's say that the maybe the bad way of doing it. But in practice, in most cases, on a given text, you have a small number of key drafters, and then you have drafters who will contribute minor edits to the text, or beautification, enhancement, references, fact-checking. And then you have a core group of people who will comment on the text and decide whether there is consensus or not. So that's sort of an implicit usage model for private commenting within a group or an organization. Then you have The other case of you submit a law proposal to the citizen of Norway, and actually, you know, if 1% of the citizen look at it and 1 out of 1,000 comments on it, it's a good performance for participatory democracy, but and a significant one. But nonetheless, you have thousands of people commenting, then you are in the classical situation of a complex online public debate, and the roles you need are roles for processing the comments. It's the drafting issue becomes maybe a secondary one in comparison of the ability to process many, many comments. And comment is only at a primitive stage of what we think is needed, but we do not have enough use cases to know in which direction to go to elaborate more compared to what exists at present. Now, I told you, people use it in manners that have nothing to do with what these usage models. Text Center Classroom, I will show you that, because it's worth seeing. Actually, it's... There is a, in the US, there are schools of teaching that call themselves text-centered teaching. They are mostly teachers of English and literature, and they do that from the primary school to university, and their activity is to put the text at the center of some collective process. And here, this is when one of the most beautiful examples we have seen, because many of us, actually we support these communities. We have donated to them a number of professional subscription to the service, so they, because actually the kids are sometimes very happy, but sometimes not, that their comments would be seen by everybody. So they want also to be able to comment in privacy, in the classroom as a collective. But here, basically what the rule of the game we have asked, what it was every kid must write at least one comment. And so you can see that every part of the text is commented. Actually, if you look at it, you will see that this is a school in a very derelict neighborhood of Chicago, and it gives you some confidence on what you can get using IT. Children who are all naturally smart to do. It's actually quite fascinating work and usage, and it goes a bit in the direction of what I said is my interest for. A cultural or a capability building view on information technology. Other example, I show you the self-annotation of text. I do it a lot. It's not taking, but as resiliency, and that you can come back to, and it's maybe not that I'm not sure it's the most efficient way of doing it, but I do it now. Maybe this web service freedom is maybe the single most important issue of openness in the present world. I mean, it's if you have it's a few years. We know it, but software as a service can be a major tool of reproprietorization, even in cases where there are free software alternatives. There are many groups. I'm a member of at least three or four groups, international groups, that try to to agree on what he calls for a web service to have reasonable freedom. And we don't agree yet, but I think we all agree that these three properties are needed. The first is, it must be easy to take your data out. Not Google Docs. Not certainly not Hotmail, but not. And comment is not truly as it should be at this stage from this viewpoint, because you cannot say, I want to export all my text. You know, you have to do it text by text, and that's you know, it's a hard decision for a company to invest when you have people who are requesting functionality and you say, no, we can't do it because we are going to make it easier for you to go away from us. And so we still try to do it, but the only real thing that gets you to do it is pressure.
If you have a data export API, or not API, but code base, wouldn't that also make it easy to generate, for example, PostScript for printing, like in a PDF?
Yes, it would. Yeah, that's a good, that's a very good point. It can help our motivation by combining export. But actually, we have a basic XML scheme for exporting the text with its comments, but we still are missing an added value XML scheme that would allow to do also batch processing of comments in other tools, for example, lexicographic or tools. And I think along this line, we will find additional motivation indeed. Thanks a lot for the comment. Of course, you need the freedom of a code base, but the GPL or any other free software or open source software license is not enough, because they are all using the notion of distribution of code or something similar to trigger the obligation to redistribute the source code. But if you look at a service like comment, there is maybe a fourth of the effort in the client and three-fourth in the server. And so if someone redistributes the JavaScript and lets us guess from of a modified version of our service, and lets us guess what is the server-side code and rewrite it, we are in a position where we are going to compete with proprietary free riders, and we agree to compete with free software free riders, but not with proprietary free riders. So that's freedom seen from our side, but it has a consequence for freedom seen from the user side. So the Affero GPL was really done to enable that, it does it well. It has as soon as you operate a web service, there is some uncertainty about when you operate a web service inside an organization, exactly what is the situation. But at least when you operate one, and on the base of modified code, you have to redistribute the modified code, source code. The last criterion is no dependency on any external infrastructure of proprietary data. The typical example is GIS. That is, you can be, if you have your annotations and the word user's annotation to Google Maps and Google Earth, it's no value to export them if you do not have the underlying geographic data. So, as I said, we license it under the GNU Affero GPL, version 3 is the same license than STET, but that's a coincidence. I mean, this is both are our web services. We have a trademark reservation, that is, Comment is a trademark in Europe and the US, and we do not allow people to use it. And that's actually not so easy to do without hindering the take-up of the software. We very much want people to install Comment, and though it was painful until our last version, but it's now becoming much easier. But it's still a problem, and we are going to work on a thing called a trademark regulation, which basically defines how you are allowed to use it. And in particular, we will allow people who run unmodified services based on Comment to run it using R. So you will not have what is happening today with Firefox, which is no longer included in Debian 3 because of the trademark. This is not in Debian yet, but we want it to be there one day. Our business model, I said a bit about how we discriminate between free of charge and paying. We have a professional service in the R web service that is as an a yearly subscription at a cost that we took in the order of magnitude of the cost for Flickr or similar services. It's a bit more expensive, in particular when the dollar is falling sharply. Majority of our users are in the US, but we have users in many countries of the world. The take-up of our commercial software is at very initial stage. The business model in which we believe locally, in particular in France, but also in other countries, is to create specialized instances of a service, something with your own URL, your own visual identity, customized homepage, saying while you are putting text, submitting them to comments, but the rest of it being comments with minor adaptation. And we have clients, customers who have ordered this from us. Order of magnitude is the basic thing is €2,000. To be set up at €1,000 per year, but we remove, let's say, in reasonable, up to reasonable levels or any quantitative limits. But if the organization has, it means 20,000 private users, then we will charge more. Because it's connectivity intensive and also maintenance intensive. And we provide a different support and a better support in that case. We say we would be happy to integrate Comment with the internal information infrastructure of an organization. Of course, we have in mind things like parliaments, but this requires additional functionality on which we are working. We presently, when people have trouble installing the software, we support them. On an individual basis, with reasonable reactiveness, and we will not tell them. Wait for the next release. If there is a blocking thing, we release it immediately so they can install the software. But of course, as we see that it is growing quite fast, and at some point we won't be able to provide this individual service because we are 5 people in our company and it brings no money. So there is no miracle. And finally, we are, we have, for example, we have a research program for funding for a cooperative research project where we will do a specialization of comment for technical standards and legal texts. So this is, but this is a special case because it's this is research funding, but more generally, we think there is a case for special, I don't know how you call that in French, we say métier, for applications that are targeted to a specific profession. Let's say we think, you know, notaries, notaries.
In English, I think you're looking for a vertical market.
Let's say or vertical market in particular, because they are more niche than this generic text annotation. You know, we are if Google wants to do to redo comment in Google Docs, they will. But our only ability to resist that is that we are offering a free service without advertising, and we can be trusted on privacy more than they can. But apart from that, if they want to wash us away, they can. A few words on technology. The back office is Django, a Python-based development framework that enables us to the first version of comment in Java, and this was costly, and in the end we realized that we would absolutely not be agile enough in reaction to needed new functionality, or and so we went for a much simpler development environment, even if we lose a bit in terms of integration with large-scale information systems that are Java-based in many companies or organizations. As I already told a bit on the unstructured text, the future specialized version, it's not always vertical markets, it's also, let's say, special needs. I mean, I don't think producing encyclopedia is a market, but it's clear that we have been approached by phone. I mean, there are about 20 projects in the world of people who want to do an encyclopedia which would be more editorialized than Wikipedia and less than Newpedia. And some of them have approached us for using comment rather than a wiki, but that would call for a much better drafting system with templates like there are in Wikimedia, for example. And finally, we want to integrate comments and revisions. Right now, you have to have two windows, two versions of your text, one with the comments and the one you are writing, and two windows, and you change the workflow state of your comment when you have done when you have integrated it in. We want, of course, in some cases, comments are suggestions for drafting, and we want to have types of comments that are amendments, and you click approve, and that's done. But that's connected to the issue of having a more structured underlying text format. How can you contribute? First of all, I must acknowledge that we are not making it easy, because as Salve pointed to me while we were touring Oslo, we do not have a bug tracking system up, we do not have a functionality request, usage feedback. We are in the process of putting that in place. What we very much need is indeed bug tracking we get. Okay. But feedback on usage we don't, and since we don't spy on private usage, that's a real mess for us, because 95% of usage is private, and we don't know what people do. We know it only when they hit a problem. So we need to put a facility in place so they can volunteer that. Translations, there is a huge translation effort of Ubuntu in Iceland, because this is part of a plan to replace all Microsoft software by free software in Iceland, because Microsoft will not translate Windows and other application software to Icelandic, so because there are only 250,000 locutors. So I'm sure they will do it once the Ubuntu translation, which is 80% done. And as part of that, it's being comment is also being translated in Icelandic, and if you want to translate it to Norwegian, the interface, it's so that 2 days of work plus minor work when we issue new versions, and you just use the contact form and we'll send you the needed files. And we do not have an open developer community. I mean, the first stage is we are going to put in place a reasonable developer website we don't know yet exactly how to put in place a developer community. Right, we don't know. We think the usage base is not big enough for having real changes, but the usage is growing. What we really don't know is how to handle copyright. We request a transmission as MySQL does for the roadmap. We do not intend to do dual licensing. If someone wants to take comment and remove the quantitative limits and run a service under another name, they can. If you know, they can. Right now, you can have only two texts that are for private commenting. They can remove that. If they want to do it and operate for free text, they can. Nobody does, but so we. It's not that we want to do dual licensing.
And keeping that in mind, that you don't want to do dual licensing, what you should do is write up a contributor agreement. Yeah. So when people contribute code to you, you say that you do it with the understanding that you will not be doing licensing. All of their contributions will be relicensed under the GNU Afro license. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they know, you know, everybody happy.
I think we do not have a fatal issue at all with that. It's just actually, web services are the GPL version 3 is not, of which Afferent GPL is a special case, is quite, I'm done. I don't need, this is last slide, so. The Afferent GPL is a mess because, when you apply it to real-life web service situation, we use code from 12 or 13 libraries, and for each of them, when we distribute, we have to say which license applies that is compatible with the Afferent GPL version 3. And sometimes we cannot use code that is under GPL LGPL2 and not LGPL2.1. And we have to use BSD code to make it compatible with. I mean, this is stupid stuff. But I mean, we have a relatively complex release management, and we are a bit afraid of making it even more complex. But progressively, I think we are going to replace parts of these, in general, these small bits of code, but very well written. And you know, a small Python library, you know, it's stupid because it's well written, and why would you write it again? But I think I don't.
Well, I think we have time for one question. Quick one.
Or two. Because I went to...
We can take it after the presentation, because I had both question and the comment and suggestion as you asked on the last slide. So it's three things.
Do you want to take it at the dinner or you want to take it now?
We can take it afterwards because Salve said it's a bit lack of time.
Okay, we are finished. Thank you.
Thank you.
Social stuff. We go out to eat if somebody wants to join us. There's a restaurant right over the other side of the square.
The Greek one?
The Greek one. Otherwise, thank you for coming. Welcome next month if you like this. We'll be talking about Perl version 6 and what's happening there.
And if you have, I was too talkative, as happened over time, but if you have questions that come to your mind later, you Google me on, and you will find my email on the first link, an image of my email, and you send a question by email and I will answer.
Yeah. Thank you for being here.